Welcome to the Experience Christian Church podcast. We're so glad you're here. Experience is a growing church in Exton, Pennsylvania, passionate about helping people find a fresh start with God. Our mission is simple, to help you experience God's love in a real, practical way, no matter where you are on your journey. Whether you're joining us in person or online, we love to stay connected. Find us on social media at Experience Christian Church on all social media outlets, or visit experiencecc.org. to catch up on messages, explore our YouTube channel, give online, and connect through groups, both in person and virtually. We're so glad you're tuning in. We hope today's message will be an encouragement to you and inspire you along your journey. Now let's dive in.
All right. Well, let's get cranking. In 2008, I moved to Bel Air, Maryland after living in PA for 6 years. And it was I had been up here as a youth minister, really enjoyed my time here, felt a calling to go down into Maryland. And so my friend said, hey, before you leave, I'd really like to paint this picture for you. He is an outstanding artist. He said, I'd love to. He's like, just give me a theme. I told him a couple things that I liked. He said, okay, I'll get to work. I moved down to Maryland. And I'm in Maryland about 2 months, and he calls up and says, hey, I just want to let you know the photo's finished. I'm so excited to give it to you. I can't wait till you see it. Come grab it. I looked at my schedule, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, I'm not going to make it up here for probably 2 months. So I told him a date I'd be up. It was going to be in the summer. And so I came up. I was actually preaching at the church I was at previously. I stayed the night Saturday night. Sunday, I mismanaged my time. I call him. I'm like, I totally ran out of time. I'm going to head home. I will make it up here soon to get that photo. I'm so appreciative of it, but I'm going to head home. So then I head home. Then another 2 months go by. I wasn't able to schedule yet. I get a call from my friend. He said, hey, Matt, are you okay? I said, yeah, what's going on? He said, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I don't think you deserve this photo. And I said, wow, what do you mean? And he said, I put my heart into this thing and put over 40 hours into this painting. And as I was painting it, people would come over and they're like, man, this thing's the coolest thing I've seen. What are you doing with it? And he's like, oh, I'm giving it to Matt. And then as months went by, they're like, he still hasn't gotten that thing yet? Like, no. Do you want to buy it? Can I buy it? I love it. And so he's like, this is how it's been going, and I haven't heard from you. Are you okay? And so I decided to take my mask off and be like, man, it's really been a hard move. But the last thing I wanted you to do is feel like I don't appreciate what you're doing. You see, when I came up there and didn't want to swing by and get it, it's because I felt you deserved more of my time than just a swing in, throw the picture in the back of the car, and head home. Like, I wanted us to spend hours together. And he's like, well, I'm glad you said that, because that's not how it was received at all. I really didn't understand how the Matt I thought I knew is so out of character. And thanks for sharing that. And I'm like, yeah. I say, I'll come up right now and get it, because he's like, well, I'll meet you halfway. And so we met at Kennett Square, and we spent 2 hours at Applebee's, just recapping, and then that photo made it in the back of the car. Here's a picture of that thing. It is literally, I think it's almost 6 feet wide, and just layers and layers. And those of you that know what that verse is, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another, that's Proverbs 27:17. And what that's saying is conflict can actually bring us together. How ironic that I don't spend a whole lot of time with Pat anymore, but it created a brotherhood that if he called me today, I would be there. You know, sometimes it's hard to stay in touch with people, but that kind of gift with that kind of message actually helps a relationship, doesn't it? And so it's an interesting thing to think about when we sometimes think conflict equals a failure in our relationship, right? Like, we'll think, oh, we just can't seem to get along, so that must mean there's conflict, our relationship's failed. But in reality, conflict can actually help our relationship. No one likes to be pointed out or called and said and called out. But we don't actually smooth off the rough edges of our personality unless someone's willing to call us out. In fact, I would rather be called out by someone who cares about me than everyone avoid me because I live out these annoying characteristics. You know what I'm saying? So being called out is actually a good thing. I don't have this as a slide, but the proverb is, wounds from a friend are better than kisses from an enemy. People around you that just cheer you on all the time, no matter what you do, that's not real. But someone who calls you out, it's like a kiss. It's like, hey, you can do better. And so that's what we're going to be talking today. We've been in this series called Better Together. And the first week, we really looked at this definition of friendship. Friendship involves the mutual exchange of knowledge, kindness, service, and celebration. It's a growing commitment among peers to seek the well-being of one another. And what I love about that definition is it says it's a mutual exchange. In other words, it's not one-sided. We've said that. Knowledge is simply learning something about one another, sharing something about one another. It's knowledge. Did you know? Oh, great. Kindness is being a warm, hospitable presence. Service is being willing to ask for a favor, and then a favor's met. And then celebration, and I'll add grieving, because we need people that will celebrate our highs and grieve with us in our losses, right? This is a powerful thing to say we are better together has to involve some level of this. And that phrase, growing commitment, means it's progressive depth, which means your relationships, some of those relationships should evolve deeper and deeper. We talked last week about these concentric circles, and I think it's helpful for us to see it again. So you haven't have this large gathering. Everyone in this room should be able to do those four things at a very high capacity, right? Care for one another, listen to one another, celebrate with one another. But then you have a small group of people, 10 to 20, that you can actually start sharing a little bit more of yourself with, your highs and your lows, and they start seeing it, almost seeing a pattern in some of your behaviors, right? And then so these are people that can speak life into you. And then alone with God, and then one-on-one relationships, these are people that you've really went through everything. They know nearly everything, your history, your fears, your dreams, your shortcomings. That's what we talked about last week, this willingness to be known and to know other people. And then ultimately, I believe this all starts with this ability of being alone with God, that time of letting him know us, to spend time with him, taking off our mask fully and saying, help me bring other people in to these one-on-one relationships. And you probably notice that progressive depth happens in those, right? I mean, the more you know about me, the higher the expectations for you are, right? Like if I said something here, I always overshare. Ask anybody here. Does Matt overshare? The answer is yes. And I try to do that to model kind of what it's like to walk with God and walk with other people. But at times, if I said, man, I'm really struggling with loneliness this week, I do not expect every one of you to say, let's hang out this week, right? But if I said that in a small group setting of 10 to 12 people, I'd expect someone to follow up. And then if I told someone that I'm really close with, that one-on-one relationship, if they just listened and forgot about it, we would have a hard conversation. Like, I'm not going to continue to share things if they're not met, if they're not listened to. Because we said love pays attention, right? Three problems with that phrase, love pays attention. One, we typically look at love as, what do I get out of it? I love candy. I love this person. They make me feel good. But biblical love is actually sacrificial. In fact, you have to pay love. You pay it. And to pay it without expecting something back is Jesus' kind of love, isn't it? Love pays, and then lastly, attention. A willingness to look at you and listen to you and not think about what I'm doing the rest of the day. Or say, oh, I think my phone went off. Love pays attention means we're locked, and I'm listening, and I'm taking mental notes, and I might be actually writing a handwritten note to follow up with you on something, right? That's love pays attention. And so the risk is when I bring someone into this circle, I'm raising the expectation, and when I raise my expectations, I'm prone to disappointment, right? You ever had someone say they'll call, and they didn't call? Ever had someone said, I'll be there for you, and they ghosted you? Ever had someone said, I promise, but they never? You loaned them something, they never paid it back? And so it's so easy to distance ourselves from that, but we may not know what that other person's going through. We may not know the situation. And so rather than distancing ourselves, the Bible commands us, asks us to do something that's very difficult and confront one another. And confronting one another is not fun. Put a list of things. Actually, if it's fun for you, let's talk later. I need you to be my hitman, right? I could use a couple of you. But there's just this idea of conflict that's hard. But we said iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And so we have to get in our head that conflict does not mean the community failed. It's just a doorway to deeper spiritual transformation. It's an opportunity to have your flaws pointed out and actually have deeper relationships. And so as we do that, let's make sure we get a right understanding of this. Depth is impossible without navigating conflict. And you know that's true. Every meaningful relationship, everybody that you love disappoints you, but you've determined for that individual, it's worth the price, right? My wife and I, we've argued once, right? 22 years, one argument. There's going to be another one after church. Now, that's worth me paying attention to, right? That's worth me in it because I'm invested. The issue is, look around the room. I'll wait you out. You're still, some of you are still staring at me. Look around the room. Everyone's worth an investment because we're all part of the same body. And it's easy to say, well, that person's just a pinky to me. Well, cut your pinky off. It affects things. We don't cut our pinky off. We care for one another. So that's what we're dealing with today. That's what we're talking about today. Because Jesus says when we do this well, you know this verse, your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples, right? And we think, church, this beautiful place that Jesus established, it must be easy in church to love one another. And then you read through the scriptures and you realize the disciples were at one another. Paul had problems with Barnabas and other people. And then you also realize that most of Paul's letters is about correcting the congregations. So if you've ever been hurt by church, welcome to an imperfect group of people. Our differentiator could be we choose to love one another instead of separate from one another. Choose to draw out the best in you instead of just accepting things as they are. See, Jesus knew this was going to be a challenge, and that's why he gave us a way to address conflict. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Matthew 18:15 says, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. Now, every person in this room has a history with conflict, right? We all have a history of conflict. So let me ask you, how was your home when conflict happened? Did your caretakers fight in front of you, or did they go behind closed doors? Who got to witness fights from their caretakers? Raise them a little higher so we get a feel for the room. All right. Who never heard their parents argue because it kind of, or caretakers, because they went into the private room and the worst thing they could do is show you an argument? Anybody? Okay. So when you get in the space, that can make you feel like it's time, it's on or it's time to get away, right? How many of you raised in homes where it was welcome to challenge an idea, to point out someone else's fault, even if they were your parent? You could actually point it out. Raise your hands high. All right. Who was told that don't backtalk, questioning is disrespectful, right? Raise your hands higher. All right. So you can see the complexity, right? Because it's less about right and wrong. It's about culture a lot of times. And so we come into an argument. If someone confronts us, we may be ready to talk about it, or we may say, no, I need to shrink back from it. It's challenging stuff. And so we actually have to be willing to engage in this conversation because there's tension involved. And so the first thing, as we look at this blueprint together, I think we have to realize what the purpose is, because the purpose can actually welcome us to do it. The purpose is restoration. Let's read that verse one more time. He says, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. You know, it doesn't say you won the argument. You won. Great job. They feel awful. You feel good. They're sorry. You're not. That's not the point. But we've been in situations where that was the point. We've been in arguments where it was always about winning. There was no listening. There was no empathy. It was about winning. That's right. And so it's important that we actually slow down and let's think about the purpose. What is the purpose? Because when we think about the purpose, we realize it's about restoration, not retaliation, healing, not humiliation, connection, not correction, right? Just a different mindset of why we're choosing to enter into this kind of dialogue. Our goal isn't to shame someone into change. It's to lovingly get our relationship back on track. We don't need to prove that we're better. Right? You see, Jesus, he didn't come to cancel our sin, did he? Cancel us in our because of how sinful we were. He actually covered that sin. And so it's just really important to think, how did Jesus model loving one another? He was the initiator. He came and loved us. And so what outcome am I hoping for is really important before we dive into the conflict. The next thing we have to do is assess the conflict, prayerfully take it to God, and maybe a wise counselor, right? We have to actually think, is this big of a deal? Love covers a multitude of sins at times, right? You always don't have to confront every single person. And also, big feelings doesn't mean someone has sinned against you. It could just be an irritation. It could just be conflict of personalities. So we really have to assess this. And that's why I think it's really important to talk to God about it first, right? Like, God, I am so angry, I could rip a phone book in half, right? I guess maybe you feel that way. But you just sit there in a moment. You're like, God, what are these big feelings? Why do I have these big feelings? Why do I feel so much anger? And you may find it's not that person. It's 10 other people, right? You've been there. Sometimes the people we love the most get the most brunt because we have the highest expectations of those that walk with us. Can't you meet my every need? Don't you know what I'm going through? Right? Nobody can own what only God can own. And so we realize I need to take some space. That's why, in addition to praying about it, who's your one person that you can go to? Who can you go to and say, can you give me an outside perspective on this really complicated headspace that I'm traveling in right now? You know me. Maybe you know them. Maybe you know my situation. Because a lot of times we're going to go on one of two sides. We're either going to, one, not want to engage, and they're going to like, hey, this is worth you talking about. Or two, they're going to say, hey, you might want to try a softer approach. Blowing it up might not be the best pathway. And so then we have to realize, like, can I love them without confronting them, right? That's one of the litmus tests. Can you still love this person if you don't have this conversation? Because if you feel like you can't love them, then that's almost an encouragement that you have to do this kind of conversation, right? There's a difference between loving someone and liking them also. Remember, loving them isn't based on how I feel about them. It's, can I speak to them? Can I encourage them? Can I cheer for them? It's void of your emotions. Can I do this in good conscience? Back to Matthew 18:15. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. Remember, we then, because we've assessed, this is not to punish, it's not to prove a point, it's not to do anything else but protect the connection. That's why we're making a decision to go. And Jesus doesn't say, wait for them to notice. Drop these little subtle hints that you're mad at them. Anybody have any of those in their back pocket? Like, hi. Wait until they bring it up. That's not what it says. Go privately. We like to do avoidance at times. Sometimes we like to just stew on things. Replay it in our minds a few times just to make sure we have all the details. We might vent to someone else. But Jesus says, go to them privately, directly, gently. And this is really hard to hear, but real love takes initiative. Matthew 5 talks about the importance of relationships. He says, Jesus is like, so if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar, in other words, you're coming to worship God, and in the temple, you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person, then come offer a sacrifice to God. So powerful because God cares how we get along. Look at somebody else in the room. He cares about how you get along with them. He cares about your relationship. And so we have to go make these things the best that they can be. But this is very different than what culture says. Culture says protect your peace. Jesus says pursue others, doesn't he? Because unresolved conflict poisons community. Poisons community. You know when conflict enters the room, maybe between family, how cold it gets. The laughing turns the people on edge. And you're like, woo, I feel that. We don't want that in a community committed to love one another well. So we don't want to ghost people. We don't want to gossip. We don't want to over-spiritualize things. Sometimes we call it venting, but really it's just trying to get someone else on our side. So let's not do that. Let's go directly. And the reason we go directly is because it's important to live this out. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. It's important that we're willing to actually point out the offense. Sometimes our default strategy is actually just to let them know how we're angry we are, right? What's pointing out the offense mean? I worked retail and they would say, hey, you want to always make sure that you address behaviors, not attitudes. You know, if you address an attitude, what do people do? They get defensive. You're so annoying. Don't you know how you always fill in the blank, right? But if you address behaviors, it actually gives me something to think about. It allows me to process maybe what I'm doing incorrectly. And so actually, if we're willing to point out the behaviors, then we can actually get it, because generalizations get people down. It's not helpful to say, you're just rude. It's not helpful to say, you never care about anybody but yourself. That might cause some reflection, but they really don't necessarily know when. I'm so sick of you acting like this. Anybody said that one once? Act like what? What is this? So instead of saying you're flaky, you might say, I'm disappointed every time you cancel our plans because it makes me feel like you don't care about me. That's just longer language of, I'm mad at you. You're just having to process why you have that heart problem. You've processed it with God privately. Then maybe you've gotten wise counsel. Then you've decided to go directly. And now you have something particular to say. Instead of saying you're controlling, you could say, you know, every time we get in a conversation, I feel like you don't hear me. Your voice raises, you take over the conversation, and you shut me down. It's just another way of saying you're controlling, but it's something they can correct. Oh, when we're having this conversation, let me actually stop trying to force my way in. And we all have our defaults, right? It's been modeled for us. Here's a verse I think really helps us. Don't use foul or abusive language, 4:29. Let everything you say, every word out of your mouth, be good and helpful, so that the words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. We're never going to guess someone's intentions, right? But we need to reflect Jesus' language, even in hard conversations, because you know the outcome of letting your anger out. It's never healthy. It might feel good for a few minutes, but this helps us love one another deeper and better. That's the goal in every relationship, regardless of what it is, but I think especially in a church community, we have to keep that goal as we were trying to become the healthiest community we can become. So make sure you clarify, not just criticize someone, right? Specificity, not sweeping statements. Kindness, not vagueness. It's really important to speak the truth in love. Let's read that verse one last time. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. And so to build a healthy, Christ-centered community that honors Jesus, we have to learn how to confront, but we also have to learn how to receive that truth, right? Look at there. If the other person listens, sometimes we're the confronter, and sometimes we're going to be the confrontee. I don't even know if that's a word, but it makes sense in my head. Are we willing to listen and confess when we're wrong? Because the big idea here is we just have to be wise when we're confronted. We have a choice to make. Are we going to be defensive? No one talks to me that way. Will we blame shift? Well, if you knew. Or will we humbly receive what someone has? And it's really hard to do, isn't it? Three postures that are important. This is Dr. Henry Cloud. He says there's three postures that we can have in these situations. First is the wise. Proverbs 9:9 says, instruct the wise and they will be even wiser. Teach the righteous and they will learn even more. I actually told Pat, thank you for coming to me. Thank you for saying I hurt you. Thank you for saying my intentions didn't land. What I thought honored you, dishonored you. Hard conversation, but you know, you want someone to tell you how to be better. Coaching, have a posture of humility. None of us get it all right. Don't let your pride get in the way of hearing something that can help you. The other way we can do it is be a fool. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. You talk to somebody wise, do you know how you leave that conversation? Feeling great. You're like, I can't believe how well that went. We are on a better trajectory. When you finish talking to a fool, you're confused. You're like, was it me? Was it my fault? Should I have said anything? It's worse than it was. Because here's what a fool does. Always redirects. Always shifts the blame. There's always a reason. And they refuse to take accountability. They refuse to even listen or entertain what's bothering you. Because they're too busy deflecting, right? Then there's a third level. The evil. A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. This is the person that just goes ballistic. You tiptoe around them. If you decide to confront them, you're nervous because you don't know what's coming your way. Here's how you treat each of those. The wise person, you're eager to go to them because you trust it's going to make your relationship stronger. The fool, you realize real quick you got to have boundaries. Maybe somebody else there. You're going to have to say, we're not going to have this conversation again. The next time we have this conversation, this is what's going to happen. And then somebody's evil, you're probably going to have to lawyer up or call the police. You see, there's different levels, right? You might need a restraining order. Not fun stuff, but it's reality. Because sometimes we paint it as love always demands this. Sometimes love has separation. I didn't want to teach through the rest of the verse for timing, but there's a clear escalated process. Like, if that person doesn't listen, then you get two friends to come around you. It's just a set of witnesses to help mediate for you. Then if it gets above that, you take it to the church. Some people are like, what, take it to the church? Like, yeah, I'm coming in. Me, I'm sitting there with you, right? Nobody cares. But the idea of the church is you're getting someone outside of your circle of friends, and it's two or three people that are wise in the church that can have a lot of history dealing with conflict, so they can sit with you. And their intention is what? Not to say, how could you? Actually, it is. How could you recover? How can we help you in your relationship? That's the purpose. And then it says, if they don't listen at all, treat them like you would a pagan or tax collector. And some people think that means excommunication in a really ugly way. How does Jesus teach? How does Jesus treat pagans and tax collectors? Eats with them. He eats with them. He loves them. He invites them back. But for the safety of the community, you can't have somebody who's abusive come in, hold a microphone, start looking for other targets. Does that make sense? I wasn't planning on going there, but I think it is helpful to realize it doesn't always end with a bow. Now, how I did want to end was with one single verse, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. So, a friend loves at all times. Good days, bad days. When you're moody, when you're not. When you're having a great time, when you're having a hard time. And when you have to have a hard conversation, what does a friend become? A brother or sister. In other words, that's right, preach it. You come closer in that circle. One of the ways you get closer to a circle is show you're willing to invest in hard conversations, that you're not just going to be a flighty friend, you're willing to stay at the table. And that just helps transition you to a deeper level of relationship. And so I wanted to bring up two friends of mine. Come on up, Laura and Daryl. If you'll give them a hand now, because they're going to talk about hard stuff. You clap for them now, that's great, because you might not want to clap for them in a minute. Right, Laura? All right.
Is it on?
It's on. Now, you guys really deal with this on a regular basis because of what you've chosen as a profession. So, what do you guys do?
So, we do together. We actually own a business. It's called Unstuck Insights, and we're able to go into different organizations, nonprofit and for-profit organizations, and help to manage conflict, build team cohesiveness, and get organizations working better.
Yeah. Because the goal is working better together, right?
Yeah.
It's great. So when you think about this, typically you're in a corporate setting, but you've got to see, like, The opposite of confrontation is gossip. And so how have you seen gossip just affect a culture?
So gossiping is one of the most common workplace challenges that we see. It's pervasive. And by gossiping, I'm talking about talking negatively behind people's back, so trash talking. And I think we gossip because we don't know what else to do. We have big feelings, right? We might be angry or offended or frustrated, maybe even jealous, or we might feel threatened, maybe even about our own sense of belonging. And workplaces are different, right? We have to navigate these complex interactions and situations. And sometimes we might not be confrontational. We want to avoid it. And so we end up going behind people's backs. It can also happen because the leadership hasn't created a healthy workplace culture and hasn't helped to establish norms for healthy, constructive communication. But here's the thing, gossip is anti-community. It's one of the most anti-belonging things that we can do because we can't build or strengthen a relationship when we go around the person and talk about them negatively behind their backs. And I think we might have all had the experience of this shaky foundation that makes us think we have a community because we are bonding with somebody over our mutual dislike for somebody else. And we feel solidarity. And so gossip forms alliances, but they're based on a shaky foundation because it's based on exclusion. And so it undermines belonging and connectedness. And it just sows the seeds of mistrust and ill will and the absence of grace. And in the absence of grace, disdain grows and we just get further and further apart. So gossip can be really, really difficult.
Yeah. It's almost like we have to prepare ourselves that somebody's sin that they deal with might be gossip. And so we actually have to prepare ourselves like, hey, I shouldn't listen to that right now, right? That's a hard thing to do. Thank you. Next question I had was for, what's the first small step that begins to dismantle barriers and allows trust to build?
So when we first go into an organization, we ask some really targeted questions to help us understand, to get the feel of the organizational culture and to give teams and leaders, all the employees, a chance to really step back and self-reflect on their organization and their role in it. And one of my favorite things to do is an activity we call your why moment. We ask each person to reflect on what it is that has drawn them to that organization. What is their passion that makes them love the organization and love the work? And then they share it with each other. And invariably, people come to see that they are all there for a shared purpose, a shared mission, maybe even shared values. And things are just breaking down because they're all coming from their own perspectives, maybe different job functions. They see the world from different angles, but they're all there for a common reason. And it's similar to our church. We are all here because we want to experience God's love and we want to share that outward. But God's made us each beautifully unique, and that is the most wonderful thing. But it sometimes just means that we might not be in perfect alignment all the time.
Thank you. That's good.
So I'm laughing because I didn't know we were memorizing ours. She's going to show me up totally.
How does that make you feel, Laura? So I won't try to memorize mine either. When you help a leader confront someone, what language, posture, or mindset do you coach them to bring into the conversation?
Well, that's a tough one. So the thing is that it can be really tricky because organizations really rely on employees working together as a team, and they also rely on leaders really giving good leadership, right? So, and part of getting good leadership is really providing good feedback. So what we did in a recent workshop is we worked on how managers give feedback to their employees, and we did it through kind of almost a wayfinding. So feedback is information, and the information that you give is really a wayfinding. And so there are three pieces to that, and it's location, where the employee is currently. It's the destination, where the employee wants to get in the future, or, because we're the manager, where we want that employee to get in the future, because they might be different, and we have to have a conversation around that. And then also the direction. So how do we get to that? How do we get the employee to the place that we want them to be and that they want to be? And so it's really almost like setting GPS coordinates and getting to the direction. And so that actually allows for leaders and employees, for managers and employees, to have a conversation that's a productive conversation. It's a growth mindset conversation, in terms of, we know that every employee has the opportunity and the ability to grow and to achieve. And so we should approach employees in that way as we are coaching the leaders. And that that offers a space for employees, for all individuals, to provide input. And that input is key, because then everybody has skin in the game. Everybody's really able to kind of move forward in a direction, and they know what that destination is. So everybody's really moving towards the same purpose.
That's good. Great. And then finally, we're an intercultural space, which has its own unique challenges, because we just have very different expectations. Sometimes we just assume someone else gets us, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you suggest we navigate that?
Oh, perfect. So almost every organization now is intercultural, and almost every organization now is also intergenerational. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing a lot of work on how to manage and how to work with intercultural and intergenerational teams. And that can cause workplace tension. But because there's a desire, and I think it's sowed in us, to want harmony, a lot of organizations actually don't open space to have conversations about those types of differences. In fact, it's kind of like they hope to sweep it under the rug and not talk about it. And if you're in a place where there's no conversation about it, then actually everyone in the organization, it's difficult for them to feel seen and to feel heard. And so it's really important to open up space, and to, as we coach managers and leaders, to how to open up space to actually have those conversations. And those conversations, once the spaces are open, they begin to keep happening, and they happen fluidly and organically. And that's really, really important, because people can be themselves, they can be open, they can be honest, and they can really build relationships. And they build relationships on common ground. Because once you know more, it's about that going deeper, right? Once you start to know more about an individual, then you start to find more and more commonalities. And that allows more and more space to actually grow that relationship. Yes, there might be tension. Yes, there might be disagreement. But we also get to understand that that disagreement is probably cultural, right? In terms of, I believe that my way is the right way, and this is how everybody should do things, right? And that's because in my world, I was born into that. I was raised in that as a child. But what I need to understand is that everyone I encounter has had a different experience. And so they're bringing different cultural norms to the table. And so if I can kind of think about my piece as cultural norms and not the absolute, right? Then I can look at other people's cultural norms and say, oh, that's how they move through the world. And the more, again, that space, the more we can share those things, the more we can begin to understand where other people are coming from. And that's key.
That's great. One of the main reasons I wanted to have Daryl and Laura up here is because, you know, a lot of your conflict may not happen in the church, but it may happen at work. You are a light sent out. You should be different at your workplace. You should handle conflict differently. And you may just not know how. And so Daryl and Laura, that's what they do. And so they would love to have a conversation with you. Another thing is, sometimes we're not used to a church setting where the lead pastor isn't seen as ultimate authority and having all the right answers. Those of you that have been here for 6 years, you're shocked by how much I don't know. But you have to have a place to go, right? And so it's not a problem for, I'm thick-headed. I usually get something about 3 times. God will have to remind me 3 times. I'm not the standard of perfection. So you can go to a leadership team member, go to another staff member. I just ask that you come to me first. I ask that you go to each other first. If you're feeling like you're not getting along with a volunteer leader, go to them first. But then don't feel like I'm betraying this person's character, because it's really important when we're committed to sharpening one another. Nobody's above reproach. I like this statement. When you can't question a leader, leaders do questionable things. Right? When you can't question someone, they will do questionable things. If as soon as you ask someone and they're like, why are you asking me? That's none of your business. That's a red flag. Would you pray us out?
Yeah. Dear Heavenly Father, we're just so grateful. Well, we're just so grateful for you because you have a perfect design. We're so flawed, but you have the perfect design, and you just feed us information. You feed us the way to go. The Bible is just the pathway. It's our guidebook, and we're just so grateful that you left us instructions. We're so grateful for this church, Lord, and the opportunity to just share from the heart. When you look out into the congregation, you see there's so much, so many different cultures, different nationalities, different perspectives represented, and it's all in honor and glory to you. We just pray, Lord, that you would continue to bring us together, continue to help us to deepen our relationships with one another, and of course, obviously, Lord, to deepen our relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you both.
We hope something you heard today encouraged you and helped you draw closer to God. If this message was helpful, we invite you to like it, share it on social media, or send it to someone who may need to hear it. You can also visit experiencecc.org. There you'll find giving options to support our mission of sharing Jesus with the world. If there's anything we can do for you, whether if it's a question, a prayer request, or if you just are in need of someone to talk to, don't hesitate to reach out. We truly believe we're better together, and we'd love to connect with you. God bless you, and we hope that you have an amazing week.